You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, everybody. Happy Inauguration Day. And welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I am your host, Connor Newcomb. On today's episode, we are going to breeze through some MLB and Orioles news from the past couple of days. And then coming up after the break, we are going to finish off our series of our look at the top 10 Orioles moves and transactions of the last decade. We've got number one on the list. It's a trade the Orioles made back before the 2011 season, and they got a lot for just a little bit of value, and that is why that trade is number one on our rankings. So we will get to that a little bit later, but first, I'm going to take you around Major League Baseball. Pretty busy couple of days, both with baseball in general, but really in the American League East, and one team specifically, the Toronto Blue Jays, who I think most would put third right now in the pecking order behind the Rays and the Yankees in the East, are making some moves. Of course, the Jays did get into the expanded postseason last year as the number eight seed, but were quickly and easily swept away by the Rays in two games in the first round. But all their young hitters came up, and some of their young pitchers showed promise to get them right around a 500 record and get them to the postseason. They felt like they can win, and now they're really going for it, as they have made some big moves over the past couple of days. Now, it all started for Toronto, of course, this offseason, as they looked around, and you know they had Hyunjin Ryu. They brought back Robbie Ray on a one-year deal, whom they had traded for from Arizona at the deadline. And now they continue, as yesterday they signed the reliever Kirby Yates to a deal, as he gets a one-year $8.25 million contract with the Blue Jays. And of course, Yates, who was great over the past couple of seasons with the San Diego Padres, will now join a Blue Jays bullpen that, frankly, you know, was probably the weakest part of their team. And although they had some guys really overperforming last year, they never had a true closer on this team. And some of that had to do, of course, with the injury to Ken Giles. But, you know, this team could really use a guy like Yates, whether he's in a setup or a closer role. And, of course, Giles is a free agent now. And Kirby Yates, he was a 2019 All-Star with the Padres, 41 saves for them, and a 1.19 ERA in 61 innings. Last year, you know, he was hurt for San Diego. He only pitched 4 1/3 innings for the Padres last year, got 2 saves before getting injured. But he looks to be back and be a big part of that Blue Jay bullpen. But that was not the big-ticket item. They then went on last night to make their big splash. George Springer is the newest Toronto Blue Jay, and he gets added to what was already a very, very good outfield. But Springer is going to get 6 years, $150 million to join the Blue Jays in the outfield. Of course, Springer, who is now 31 years old, previously spent his entire career since coming up in 2014 with the Astros, an All-Star in 2017, 2018, and 2019, a career numbers that are just fantastic. He played in 51 games last year, 265 average, 359 on base, 899 OPS. Would have been an All-Star had there been an All-Star game again last year. 14 home runs for Springer as well. He is still playing great baseball, and they're going to get him for 6 seasons in the outfield. And then as we talk right now, there are rumors, nothing official yet, but there are rumors that the Blue Jays are also looking to add Michael Brantley to that outfield. Of course, another former Astro who came over to Houston in a trade with Cleveland a couple of years ago. Of course, Brantley, obviously a little on the older side. He will be in his age 34 season next year. But, of course, he was an All-Star in 2019 with Houston. Last year with Houston, again, would have been an All-Star, 46 games, hit 300, 840 OPS, 5 homers. Was an All-Star in 17 and 18 with Cleveland as well. He's seemingly gotten better as his career has gone on. And nothing official there, but he's being connected to the Blue Jays as well. So that lineup looking really good. You get Springer in that outfield, potentially Brantley. And then you also, of course, still have Randall Grichuk, the Oriole killer. Still have Teoscar Hernandez. Still have Lourdes Gurriel Jr. They might even if you're looking at it, they're probably going to trade one of those outfielders that they have already had on the roster to try and add some more pitching to this team. But right now, looking stacked, especially if they do add Brantley as well. But the couple of other moves around the league outside of the Blue Jays over the last couple of days were a little more minor than that one. The Angels signed the left-handed pitcher Jose Quintana to a one-year, $8 million contract. The 31-year-old, has a 3.73 career ERA with the White Sox and the Cubs since 2012, although he did miss most of last year with injury issues. You had Chris Devenski signing with the Diamondbacks for a $1 million deal for 2021. Devenski, who of course had spent his entire career since 2016 with the Astros and had been a pretty solid part of their bullpen, but really struggled and had injury issues last year and honestly wasn't great in 2019 either. So he'll try to put it back together in an Arizona uniform. And then the final one from the week is Wade Davis is back to the Royals on a minor league deal. Remember how good Wade Davis was with the Royals the first time around, of course, helping lead them to the World Series title when he was an All-Star in 2015. The great closer for that team in 2014, 15, and 16 had some unbelievable stats in that three-year stretch where Kansas City was really good. He threw 183 innings and had a 1.18 ERA over those 3 years. Then was traded to Chicago, was an All-Star with the Cubs in 2017. Then he signed that three-year deal with the Rockies. And in those 3 years with the Rockies, 18, 19, and 20, he's been really, really bad. Last year with Colorado, 5 games, 4 1/3 innings, 10 earned runs for Wade Davis. Remember, he threw 43 innings in 2019 and had an 8.65 ERA for the Rockies. So he signs a minor league deal with the Royals, trying to put back together that magic he had with Kansas City the first time around. So that's where the signings are going so far here in this offseason. The Blue Jays being active, they're trying to compete with the Rays and the Yankees and the AL East. The Red Sox and the Orioles are going to be left way behind in 2021. It looks like. But as we kind of switch to the Orioles and where they stand in offseason news, obviously it's going to be more so with their prospects. And of course, we talked about the Baseball America Top 100 coming out on Monday and 5 Orioles being named the list. This week, Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com putting together some of his top prospect lists, including his top 10 at each position. And so far, he has released the top 10 right-handed pitchers and the top 10 left-handed pitchers in minor league baseball. So on Tuesday, he announced the list of the righties, and one Oriole made the list. Grayson Rodriguez comes in as the number 7 ranked right-handed pitcher in the minor league system, according to Jonathan Mayo. Nate Pearson of the Blue Jays is number 1, who did make his debut last year. And he went a little further on Rodriguez. He said that Grayson probably has the best changeup of any of these guys, writing Rodriguez's changeup has now become his best secondary offering, thrown in the low 80s and diving and running under the barrel consistency. And he said Grayson Rodriguez, out of these 10 guys, has the highest ceiling. Mayo writing, quote, "There are many candidates on this list to claim this category, but Rodriguez's size, stuff, feel for pitching, and age, he'll be 21 for all of 2021. Make it easy to imagine the 2018 first rounder topping this list in the future." And that's what you want to hear. You know, we obviously know we won't see Grayson Rodriguez in the majors in 2021, but the hope is that we could see him in an Oriole uniform come 2022, when he could be maybe at the top of this list by that point. Then today, Mayo put out his list of the top 10 left-handed pitchers, and DL Hall has made those rankings as well. Hall comes in at number 9 on the list here, as it was Jim Callis of MLB.com reporting on this one as well. So Hall comes in at number 9. Number 1 is, of course, Mackenzie Gore, you know, maybe the best pitching prospect in baseball, the Padres left-hander who could be ready to help that team this year. But DL Hall comes in at number 9 on the list. Now, when he kind of went through the other superlatives for the pitchers, Hall did not get the mentions that Rodriguez did throughout the article. However, he is still on that list and still an exciting time for the Orioles. And the final kind of piece of Orioles news from the week is MassinSports.com's Rock Cabaco writing yesterday that he is reporting that the Orioles have received trade interest on Anthony Santander. And, of course, Santander, kind of after having a pretty good 2019, really had his breakout in the shortened 2020 season, only played in 37 games, but had great offensive numbers. And, you know, he's still under control for a number of years here. And, you know, you can't be surprised that other teams would be interested in Santander. You know, it had 130 weighted runs created plus, had 11 home runs, not a free agent till after 2024. He is going to arbitration with the Orioles. He'll make somewhere between about $1.5 and $3 million for next year. But, you know, he could be a trade candidate, but I wouldn't like to see that happen. You want to see the Orioles retain Santander. They've got him through 2024. Keep him on the team at least through there. He's shown some promise. He can really help your outfield, and hopefully you're winning by then. You still have Santander. It would be not a good move to see the Orioles trade him, but he is garnering interest, so it's something that we will keep an eye on. But now we will flip to a little bit in the past for the Orioles. And as we said at the top, today finishes up our countdown of the Orioles' top 10 moves and transactions from the last decade. The time span from January 1st of 2010 to December 31st of 2019. And we've counted down numbers 10 through 2 so far. And coming up after the break, we will get you number 1 on the list. It's a trade the Orioles made before the 2011 season that really shaped this franchise. They really gave up a little and got a whole lot. And it was a player who sat in the middle of this lineup for years to come after that and really helped turn the Orioles into a winner again. So that's coming up after the break. Back to the baseball in a sec, but we're in the offseason for baseball. But a lot of other sports are in season. We've got the NFL, the AFC, and the NFC Championship games coming up on Sunday. We've got the NBA season going. We've got college basketball, and we've got the NHL just starting as well. And if you're looking to not just watch these games, maybe make some money, place some bets as well, there's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust. That's betonline.ag. You can head over there, sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag, and use the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. Now, we're looking at this week and obviously looking ahead at the championship games in football, but also college basketball going on this week. And how about tonight, maybe digging a little deeper into the look at BetOnline. And we're looking at an interesting game, Furman against VMI. You may not know much about these two teams, but Furman's been really good this year, and VMI scores a whole lot of points. Two great offensive teams. The betonline.ag over-under number for this game is 159.5 points combined for both teams. Looking like a game where that total might go way over. VMI just played a game in which they won 110 to 103 the other day. And Furman scores a lot too. So you can take a look at that one if you're looking to make a wager. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. That's at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. And best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And write Locked On Orioles in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. So we're back here, and now it is finally time to reveal the number one transaction on our ranking and our countdown of the Orioles' top 10 moves and transactions over the last decade. But before we get you number one, a brief little recap of the rest of the list. Now, we did give an honorary number 11 mention to the Orioles signing Delmon Young to a minor league contract in January of 2014. And then we started the countdown at number 10. September of 2012, the Orioles claiming Steve Pearce off of waivers from the Yankees. At number 9, it was June of 2012 and the Orioles signing the outfielder Nate McClouth. Number 8 was December of 2016 with the Orioles selecting Anthony Santander from Cleveland in the Rule 5 draft. Number 7 on the list, the November 2013 trade that the Orioles sent minor league righty Devin Jones to the Padres for right-handed pitcher Brad Brock. Number 6 on the list, July of 2011, the Orioles trade Koji Uehara to the Rangers for Chris Davis and Tommy Hunter. Coming in at number 5, the February of 2014 signing of Nelson Cruz to a one-year $8 million deal. Number 4, December of 2015, with the Orioles trading Steve Clevenger to the Mariners for Mark Trumbo and C.J. Riefenhauser. Number 3, November of 2011, the Orioles claim Darren O'Day off waivers from the Rangers. And number 2 was a group of 3 moves that the Orioles made for starting pitchers early in January and February of 2012, signing Wei-Yin Chen to a 3-year $11 million deal, signing Miguel Gonzalez to a minor league contract, and trading Jeremy Guthrie to the Rockies for Jason Hamill and Matt Lindstrom. So that is the rest of the list, but here it is. Number 1 on our list is, as we teased it before, a trade the Orioles made. It went down on December 9th of 2010. Actually, the earliest move that was made on this list is also number 1. A trade that the Orioles made with the Twins that would shape how their organization, their lineup, their infield looked for the next 7 seasons. And that was the Orioles trading right-handed pitcher Jim Hoey, who was currently in the majors at that time, and minor league right-handed pitcher Brett Jacobson over to the Twins. Now, in that deal, they received the infielder Brendan Harris, a utility guy, but they also received shortstop J.J. Hardy, and that was the move that really did shape the Orioles. And you look at that deal, Hoey and Jacobson for Hardy and Harris, with just the amount that the Orioles got out of J.J. Hardy and his Oriole career, for what they basically gave up, which we'll let you know was almost nothing. That's why this move comes in at number 1. So first, I kind of want to start with what went in the 3 pieces around J.J. Hardy in this trade and why it was such a good deal for the Orioles. So you start with Jim Hoey, who was an Orioles 13th round pick in 2003, a right-handed pitcher who came up to the O's in 2006 and was pretty awful. 12 games, 10 innings, 11 earned runs. He came back in 2007, pitched a little bit more, 23 games, 25 innings, still not good, a 7.30 ERA. So the Orioles at that point, you know, across 2 seasons, had seen just over 34 innings from him, an ERA over 8. And, you know, it wasn't like he was a very high draft pick. He was the 13th rounder out of Rider University. I think they kind of knew what they had out of Jim Hoey. And he had spent 2008 on the mend. He had gotten injured and missed that season. And then 2009, he spent in AA, you know, coming back, kind of rehabbing and getting healthy. And the 2010 season, he had split between AA and AAA. So he still hadn't made it back to the majors since 2007. So although he had been in the majors, it was basically Orioles trading a minor league pitcher and a guy who was not having much success either way. Then you look at Brett Jacobson, the right-hander that the Orioles dealt as well. He was actually not even drafted by the Orioles. He was a 4th-round pick of the Tigers back in 2008 out of Vanderbilt before eventually making his way to Baltimore by the 2009 season, as Jacobson actually came to the Orioles as the return when the O's traded Aubrey Huff to the Detroit Tigers. And any player that comes in and replaces Aubrey Huff is a good guy to me. So it was Jacobson who had been in the Orioles system, 2009, not good numbers. But 2010 in Frederick, he pitched well, 71 innings in relief and had a 2.79 ERA. So he was looking like maybe a solid arm at age 23 in the Orioles minor league system. So they deal the both of them to Minnesota in the deal. And you know, it never really works out for Jacobson in the Minnesota organization. He gets as high as AA in their org, but then he was released. The Rockies signed him to a minor league deal. He made it all the way to AAA with the Rockies actually in 2013, but that was where his pitching career ended, never made it to the majors. For Jim Hoey, he went to Minnesota, and he spent the first half of 2011 in AAA, then actually got to the big leagues with the Twins in 2011, pitched in 26 games out of the bullpen for the Twins in 2011, and had a 5.47 ERA. Then he pitched for Toronto in AAA in 2012, Milwaukee in AAA in 2013, and then his career was over. So basically, the Twins got nothing out of this deal. You look to the other side, and the Orioles didn't just get Hardy. You know, they got Brendan Harris as well. Of course, Harris had been around the block in the major leagues by the time of the trade. You know, he was dealt. He was right around 30 years old. He had already played for the Cubs, for actually the Expos and then the Nationals, the Reds, the Rays, and the Twins. And the Twins was by far where he had made his biggest impact at the major league level. But he was coming off a 2010 season where he played in only 43 games in the majors and hit just 157 and spent most of the year in AAA because of his struggles after he had had a pretty solid stretch 2007, 8, and 9 at the major league level. And he was traded to the Orioles, and you know, it didn't really work out in an Oriole uniform. He spent all of 2011 at age 30 in a Norfolk Tides uniform in AAA, 136 games. He hit .225 with 10 home runs and a .613 OPS, and never made it to the bigs. Was actually then released by the Orioles. Did make it back to the big leagues in 2013 and played 44 games with the Angels and hit .206. But he bounced around AAA and was finished with Detroit in AAA in 2015, and that was the end of his career. So the Orioles never got him in the bigs, but he you know, provided a nice depth piece at AAA for that entire 2011 season. But you know, you really turn to J.J. Hardy, and you look at this deal, and really the Orioles gave up nothing. You know, Jacobson was older at a lower level. He wasn't even a guy the Orioles drafted. And Jim Hoey, they had seen him in the big leagues, a good sample size, and it wasn't working out. And instead, they bring in a guy like J.J. Hardy, who had been in the big leagues with Milwaukee since 2005. He was a Brewers second-round pick out of high school in the 2001 draft. And he had shown that he was a pretty good big league player. After, you know, some okay first two seasons, he comes back in 2007. He makes an all-star team with the Brewers in 2007. That year, he hit .277 with a .786 OPS. He flashed the power. He had 26 home runs that year, which was the second most of his career. And then he continued to back it up. He had, you know, another good offensive season, maybe the best of his career in 2008 with Milwaukee. Did not make an all-star team, but had really good numbers. .283 average was his career high. .821 OPS was his career high. .31 doubles was his career high. Also had 24 homers. And he was really looking good. You know, 2009, he took a little bit of a step back. And then 2010, a little bit of injury issues, only played 101 games, but did have an OPS over 700. And, you know, the Orioles thought they were getting a guy who was going to be their major league shortstop, wasn't going to be amazing, but was going to give you a good glove and hit for some power, they hoped as well. But the issue was he had almost 400 plate appearances in 2010 and hit only 6 home runs. And I think the Twins maybe thought that the power was potentially gone for Hardy. You know, the Twins had acquired him for that 2010 season in the trade that was straight up in November of 2009. It was Hardy for Carlos Gomez as Gomez went over to the Brewers. The Twins got Hardy. And the Twins basically got a very different player than he was in Milwaukee. And so after 1 year of him, they shipped him over to the Orioles. And that's why the Orioles also were able to buy so low. You know, if he would have come straight from Milwaukee, obviously Milwaukee got a player like Carlos Gomez, who ended up being a really good player for the Brewers for years in the Hardy trade. But because Minnesota had him for just the 1 year and he did not produce, you know, didn't really stay on the field, played just 101 games. Again, the average was still there, but some of the numbers were down, and obviously the power was way down with just the 19 doubles and the 6 home runs. Minnesota was willing to give him away, and the Orioles scooped him up. He comes in at age 28 for his first Orioles season in 2011, and he lights it up. That was his career high in homers. His only season where he hit 30 homers was that year. He also had 80 RBIs, which ties his career high, 27 doubles. He had a .269 average. He had an .801 OPS that year, one of only 2 years in his career where he had an OPS over 800. And he flashed some really good things for the Orioles in 2011. Then, of course, he comes back in 2012, and the offense went down a little bit, but he did have 30 doubles and 22 homers, and he won his first gold glove at shortstop for the Orioles in 2012. And then he continued to put it together. He makes his second All-Star team in 2013 with the Orioles, where he hits 25 homers that year. Also wins a gold glove and a silver slugger, wins another Gold Glove at 2014 with the Orioles at shortstop. He continues to produce offensively. Now, the offensive numbers went way, way down for him in 2015. And the injury started to stack up a bit as he brought the offense back in 2016, but the home run power just wasn't there with only 9 homers. And then, of course, we know how it ended. 2017, he plays only 73 games because of all of the injuries. He hits only 217 with a 578 OPS, only 4 long balls. And you could kind of tell at age 34, Hardy was pretty much done. It was tough to watch him run at that point. But, you know, even though the 2015 season wasn't great, he responded in 2016 with a good year, helping the Orioles to the playoffs. So, you know, you look at his career, 7 years with the Orioles, really 6 of those years were extremely, extremely productive seasons in Baltimore. He was, of course, great defensively the entire time and was the reason that Manny Machado, you know, never played short. He came up, went to third because Hardy was there, and Hardy never left. Of course, you know, his really good stretch was 2012, 13, 14, and, you know, he was a free agent coming up, and the Orioles re-signed him after that 2014 season. In October, they gave him a 3-year, $40 million extension, and he played out, you know, the rest of that deal, and then that was it after the 2017 season when it was, you know, pretty clear he was not healthy for the Orioles. But you look at his career with Baltimore, all in all, in the 7th season, he plays 889 games for the O's. He plays on 3 playoff teams. He ends up with, you know, over 3,600 plate appearances with the Orioles, a 252 average, a 293 on base, 690 OPS. He hit 107 homers and 168 doubles. He won 3 gold gloves, a silver slugger, and went to an all-star game in an Oriole uniform. And he was huge for Baltimore in his career. And you even look at what he did in the postseason. He had some big moments. You know, he had a 2-for-5 in the AL wildcard game in 2012, including an RBI in that game, which was a big hit. You know, he didn't have such a great ALDS against the Yankees, but, you know, he returned with a 3-for-10 in the ALDS against Detroit in 2014, including a big home run in game 1 against Max Scherzer that extended the Oriole lead when they needed it then. And, you know, he had some good postseason moments as well for Baltimore. And you just look at that career, the fact that the Orioles had to give up just 2 kind of throwaway minor league arms to get 7 seasons of J.J. Hardy, and for 6 seasons, you know, played at a really high level and was in there every day at shortstop for the Orioles. I know J.J. maybe wasn't the best player the Orioles acquired on this list that we put down, but because of how little they had to give up and what Hardy meant to the organization for 7 years, that is why I put it as the number 1 move for the Orioles in the last decade. But we want you to let us know, you know, how I did putting together this top 10 list. So we're, you know, going to put it out on Twitter at Locked On Orioles, the full list. And I want you to let us know how we did. And if you got some good comments or critiques, we will read them out here on the show coming up on some later episodes. But of course, we will continue to focus on the Orioles in later episodes. But if you are looking for more so of a general look around Major League Baseball, I know we give you a little bit of MLB news at the beginning of every show, but if you want, you know, some shows to focus on that every day, head over to Locked On MLB. Join Walking Baseball Encyclopedia Paul Francis Sullivan, but please call him Sully, every day on Locked On MLB for a unique look at the majors, both present and past. Featuring exciting guest interviews, routine check-ins from the Locked On MLB Network's team of local experts, and insightful analysis of the day's biggest stories, Locked On MLB is the single best source for daily baseball talk. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure to subscribe to Locked On MLB and subscribe here to Locked On Orioles as well, whether you listen on Apple, on Spotify, or wherever you are listening at the moment. Also, if you could, give the pod a rating and a review. That really helps us out as well. But we'll be back with you coming up on Friday for the final episode of the week. We are going to continue our look at the Orioles offseason and see if there's any rumors or moves made by the time we get to Friday. Also coming up over the next few episodes, remember a couple weeks ago we did a crossover episode with Kevin over at Locked On Ravens when the Ravens were still in the postseason. Thinking about doing those with the hosts maybe of Locked On Capitals, Locked On Wizards, and Locked On Big Ten with a look at Maryland, because I know many of you are fans of those teams as well, so look forward to that in the coming days. But we will be back on Friday with more Orioles talk. But until then, this has been Locked On Orioles Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.